Welcome to another special episode of Atlanta's only pro-business radio talk show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Buckhead, inside the Business Radio X studios.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Jeff Sheehan with the Sales Influences Radio Show. And I can tell you, folks, we're in for a delightful afternoon. I have two great guests with me, and this discussion should be quite lively. I hope that they've locked the doors and actually put bulletproof windows, because I think we're going to have some really provocative things regarding the world of social selling. I have with me today Bob Giammarco, the president of Social Centered Selling, certainly a professional in the sales and marketing arena, having been a national sales director at Microsoft and similar responsibilities with a number of other concerns, and also Rob Armstrong, who's the alliance director for Inside View. So without further ado, Bob, I'd like to have a few minutes of your time there to describe who you are, what you do, where you came from, and how you got into this whole world of selling and now social selling.
All right, Jeff. Well, first of all, how would I describe myself? Well, I'm a disruptor and an instigator. How's that?
Super.
So, as you know, I got into to selling for my career in technology a number of years ago, and had the pleasure of working for four great organizations in corporate America, the last of which being Microsoft, where I served as a national sales director. Have sold enterprise, mid-market, channel sales, consumer. I've sold it all. And then, of course, I have a passion for people development. So went off and started my own company 11 years ago to focus on developing sales leaders and their teams. Along the way, my other passion for technology is still there. I'm a tech geek at heart. I go about as far as don't get into the coding, but love technology, and started experimenting with the early tools back in 2002, 2003. Got involved with early blogging and started with LinkedIn the very first year. And I just said along the way, Jeff, social media is going to have a huge impact for sales, and I'm going to be along to drive that train forward. So here I am.
You certainly were an early adopter then.
Yeah.
If you get in at LinkedIn at the ground. I was 2006 myself.
Yeah, so I came in the first year, my number is like 890,000 or something. So I was a very early member in LinkedIn.
Oh, that's super. Now, again, you're also an author, and we can talk about that a little bit later. And you
sure.
also have a forthcoming book as well that you're currently working on. Rob, if we could turn it over to you, and maybe if you could just describe what you're actually doing now, where you came from, and your whole passion for the world that you're in now.
Sure, Jeff, I'd be happy to. And Barb, good morning or good afternoon. It's good to see you, or good to hear from you.
Yeah.
So I would explain myself or describe myself a couple different ways, really. One of them is I'm very much a student of sales and sales in the B2B space. I would also say that I'm very much an enabler now with the company that I'm working for at Inside View, because we really provide the tools that bring in social media and all the business firmographics and all the relevant news and insights to people that are selling in this space. So you all talked about some dates there for a little bit. I will predate you by a couple decades there. I started my sales career really in the sort of the mid-80s. So I've watched this transformation happen from coming out of college, starting in sales, and having really no other resource at my fingertips than the Yellow Pages. So obviously we've come light years to where we are today, and it's exciting for me to be able to have all the resources at my fingertips to really be a lot more successful. But more importantly, really, one thing I wanted to mention is that selling in the B2B space has completely changed. So just like we on the sales side have access to all of this information, so does the buyer community. And so, there's been a lot of studies out there that the buyer journey is really sometimes about 57% complete before they even start to talk to a salesperson. So our role here as social sellers, and to try to bring in all the insights that we can, is to try and arm those sales reps and marketing people to have as much information, if not more, than the buying population.
I couldn't agree more. And you know what? I'm young enough to remember libraries. You remember those buildings? Rob.
They still have them, believe it or not.
Where we actually went into a physical building and pulled books off shelves to try and do research on organizations. Yeah, I remember when the computer on the desk like took up the entire desk.
Exactly.
You talked about Yellow Pages.
Yeah.
I had one delivered yesterday in my house.
And like, what is this?
What is this? It was like a record. I swear there was nothing, no mess at all to it.
Right. God bless them. I'm surprised they can still sell advertising for that thing, but there must apparently be a market. I mean, today, if I need something, probably like both of you, first thing I do is go online. I just look it up.
Yeah, it has changed so dramatically.
And yeah.
It will continue to change.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
In the future.
And Rob's absolutely right. It's really so important to be more intelligent and more knowledgeable, because we know buyers are. And I think there are a lot of sellers, and Rob would probably agree with me, that seem to push back on that. They really push back on the notion that buyers are out there doing early stage research. And that can be even in the most complex, Jeff, of B2B sales, problems they're trying to solve. So one of the things I love about Inside View, and so I can do this, I'm a raving fan and have been a user of Inside View since 2009 and profiled them in the book. They give you additional information at your fingertips to really be very well prepared for your sales meetings. And, woe be the salesperson who isn't, because buyers don't have a lot of patience for that these days.
No, you're absolutely right with that, Bob.
Yeah.
What was interesting, though? Yesterday I read something. It was talking about, we all studied marketing, and the 4 P's of marketing, completely dead. Now, when I talk, I go out there. The thing is, the 4 P's have not died. I think they're still a very, very important aspect of business. What they were saying is the customer has replaced the 4 P's. I beg to differ, because I think if you don't have your product, if your product isn't stellar, if the pricing isn't correct, if you don't know how to position it from a place, a location, whatever, and promote it, then it's all for naught. You can have customers in that, but if you don't have your basics in place, you're never going to succeed.
Yeah.
And so you have to really, in any of this selling, it all goes back to basic fundamentals of business.
So does anybody remember a product called OS2?
Yes.
IBM OS2 operating system. It was far better than Windows at the time. And yet,
yep.
Who ended up becoming the market leader?
Right.
Microsoft. They just out-marketed the heck out of the competition. I think we see that all the time.
No question.
But you see, I saw that yesterday, and I was quite surprised. You feel the same way, Rob?
I do. And one thing I wanted to mention, just as we were talking about kind of how the buyer's journey and how selling to the buyer thing has changed, it's, at Inside View, what we really believe is that it's all about the data. So we're not just sales focused. We're very marketing focused, too. We help the marketing. We try to bridge that gap between marketing and sales, really, so that marketing people that are responsible for getting good leads to salespeople can get better leads to them, because there's better data in there. So the one underlying theme that we really believe in is that there's no one true source of data. So, Jeff, when you introduced me, you said that I was an alliance director, and I really run the partnership between InsideView and Equifax. So Equifax is one of our about 40,000 different data sources that we bring into the tool, because we believe that looking across all those data sources, including bringing in social media, news insights, all the business firmographics information, that's what can really empower the marketing and salespeople to be smarter and have better business discussions before they go and contact that buyer. But I think the salespeople and the marketing people need to understand very clearly that buyer, their train is leaving the station, or it's already left the station. That buyer is doing their own research, because they have access to a lot of information too, including their own social networks. They're trying to figure out what vendors they want to work with way before the salesperson talks to them anymore.
Amen.
Correct. Now, the other thing is, what are your thoughts when they say that the salesperson is going the way of the dinosaur or buggy whip of that? What do you see the role of the salesperson being in the future, moving forward in the B2B environment?
Well, that's a great question. And Barb, if I could mention this really quickly, and then I'll let you answer too. I think that it's not going away, really. It's just changed. So if I look back at my early career in sales, it used to be that the salesperson was seen as the educator. And, you know, you would go out and you would do a big presentation to a customer and you would literally almost be like a teacher. You would teach them about the industry. You would teach them about technology that's available to them, and you would teach them about your products. That part, I think, has been replaced. So the velocity maybe is quicker because the salesperson's not doing that education part anymore. Your education really is limited or more focused on what your solution set is versus everything that's available. Barb, would you agree?
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
So what do you think? So as far as the intelligence level of salespeople, it's going to have to go through the roof with regard to the type of salespeople that you hire.
Yeah.
They have to be off the charts with regard to the intellect in that, particularly with complex B2B sales, in order to be effective moving forward.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, you know, it's interesting, Jeff, that you bring up the point about salespeople going the way of the dinosaurs. Some of them are dinosaurs, and they're going to either evolve or they're going to, you know, move on to other careers. There's some interesting projections about 2020, and by 2020, 80% of salespeople won't be needed. I actually don't think that's true. I do think there will be a fair number who are not needed because certain industries and certain types of products can probably be more automated in terms of that sales process. But if you think about it, look at all these SaaS companies who have a whole build it and they will come model, and they're struggling because, you know, I think you're right when you said earlier, Jeff, that you still need to have a great product, the right price. It's got to be well positioned, and you have to promote it correctly.
Correct.
And you can't expect that if you just build it, people will come to you. To Rob's point, though, and to yours, I think you do need to be a lot more intelligent as a salesperson. Buyers are I talk to executives all the time, as I know you both do. They want people to help them solve business problems they can't solve on their own. Why do they need us? They don't need us to come in and do the dog and pony show. They don't need just to demo a product or read features and benefits off a spec sheet. They need us to understand their business well enough to help them solve those problems. And that's where platforms like LinkedIn play a role, InsideView for sure. I mean, I got to tell you, Jeff, one of my favorite features as a seller inside InsideView is that you can get data about the prospective customer's industry and industry challenges. And it will even prompt you for questions that you can ask during sales calls. So, I mean, these are all the things that, you know, if a salesperson isn't going to stop and think about the things they ought to be considering when they're going to ask questions in a sales meeting, you know, tools like InsideView can have that. But I think that the reps who continue to go the way of I'm just going to educate and spew the features and benefits, I think they're going to find new careers.
And I really
I think the one sales tactic that has definitely fallen on hard times is showing up and sitting down in front of your prospect and saying, so what keeps you up at night, Mr. Customer?
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you don't know that before you walk in nowadays, your customer's going to look at you and just say, look, I don't have time to tell you all my problems and the things, the nuances that are happening in my industry. If you haven't done that research before you show up, you're totally missing the boat.
Yeah. You're toast.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's the interesting thing, Jeff. It's interesting to me how many reps just don't prepare. So they'll go to all this effort to get the sales meeting. They'll use social technologies. They'll use all these social selling tactics. They'll spend time on LinkedIn and they get the meeting. And as you know, I'm very passionate about this. Technology only enables a portion of the sales process. It's only another set of tools, right, that can help a seller be successful on that.
Are you sure
end.
Of that, Barbara? The way people are positioning it, all these social selling tools, they're taking the place of the salesperson. So they're a panacea. They're a complete cure-all for the sales process. You don't need people any longer. I mean, you do it all on computers. And
yeah, no. Well, I mean, wouldn't that be nice if there was an easy button? But there's not an easy button. Now, that can certainly using social platforms can help you speed up the process in terms of reaching the right people with the right message and securing that meeting more quickly. But if you walk into a meeting and you still approach it like it's 1980, then you have wasted all that time and energy. And by the way, you're probably not going to get another shot. I mean, I'm sure Rob's got some great stories. I'll share one quickly. A local executive told me about a young man, and this executive's in the financial area. Big company who you would know, little transportation firm locally. And the guy got the meeting with the CEO. Now imagine, you get the meeting with the CEO of a major corporation, you got 15 minutes. Not only did this guy not do his homework and understand that the CEO had former Wall Street background, but they sell financial services. But this young kid comes in and decides he's going to educate this gentleman on new banking trends. That guy didn't even last 15 minutes in the interview, right? So that's an example of how you can use technology to get the meeting, but it's what you say in the meeting, what you do after that point, I think makes the huge difference.
And you have to be really trained in order to how to approach that.
Yeah, I think,
If you look at the Xerox model, professional selling skills, and some of these other programs that are out there,
right,
you still have a role in this overall sales process.
Absolutely.
Well, Rob, that's disappeared.
How does your organization train your sales folks? I'm just curious, because, I mean, you have some good people who are representing the organization.
Rob? We must be having some tech. Now, what are you seeing, Barbara, out there until we get Rob back on? What are you seeing with regard to how some of the companies are approaching this training?
Well, honestly, I don't think that they are providing enough training. I think that there is still, I mean, if you take a look from a broader perspective of what's going on in the sales industry, Jeff, think about it. Think of how few sales degrees are available through universities. So we don't even provide training in the educational system for people who want to go into sales as a career. And then I think organizations hire them and they will invest the money in, let's say, product training. They'll teach them about their products or how to talk about the features and the benefits, but they're not actually investing enough in the selling and consultative selling skills. And I think there's an assumption they can learn it on the fly, learn from their buddies in the office, whatever it might be. But I think that's a very underserved market, and it has been for many years.
No, I had the privilege of working for a Fortune 500 company many years ago, and the Xerox Professional Selling Skills Program was an integral part of their sales training process. I can't tell you how valuable that was for me moving forward from there.
Yeah, So, I think if you're not providing training, and by the way, this applies to sales, but the technology as well. You have to train people on the technology. There's an assumption, I think, that, oh gosh, because LinkedIn is free or Twitter is free, then I don't need to train my people how to use it properly. Well, of course you do. They need to understand how to use it successfully, right? So, if you're not investing in that, you're expecting your people to just kind of flounder around.
Right. Rob, do you have any comments on that? I guess Rob, we'll try to get him back on the show in a minute, but I totally agree with what you're saying in regard to that. I gave a presentation just recently to a company here, and a lot of the people there with regard to LinkedIn and use of Twitter and that, Bob, it was like deer in headlights from a standpoint of they just did not have a real clue. There were a few of them, but the vast majority of people still do not know how to use these tools for selling.
No, they don't. Well, because it's, again, getting back to what you said earlier about so many people are experts in this field, supposedly, and they make it sound like it's super easy. And there's always the platitudes about just share content, just do this. And, you know, again, no easy button. You do have to learn how to strategically work within the constructs of these platforms. You know, Twitter tends to be more informal communication. It's moving very, very quickly. And it takes a little time to get used to. You need a tool like a Hootsuite or some other kind of tool that helps you to aggregate and organize the information so that you're effective in terms of what you're doing. And when I say organize, I mean pay attention to what prospects are talking about. Pay attention to what your customers are talking about or influencers. So you need a way to organize that. LinkedIn, it's a little different. a little more professional. You want to make sure that you're sharing content that's really relevant to your brand and your messaging. And probably for me, it's less about motivational quotes and sharing, real meaty data and content that potential customers are going to really appreciate. So you're right. You've got to train people to assume that they're going to figure it out. Not only is that wasting a ton of your sales dollars, right, because you're investing money and paying for these people, but it's going to take them so much longer to get the result.
Well, the opportunity costs that they're losing.
Exactly.
The fact that they don't know how to use these tools and use them effectively. The benefits, phenomenal return on investment if they're properly trained on how to use these tools.
That's right. Well, and what we haven't also mentioned is that there's huge risk. Okay, so now we've got a bit of a problem, I think, on the LinkedIn platform where people are trying to use InMail and they're sending the same spammy messages that they were sending through email. So, the risk there is now you're really going to do additional damage to the brand. Remember, the salespeople are representing both themselves and the organization. And call me old-fashioned, but you rarely get a second chance to make a great first impression. So if you connect with someone on LinkedIn and the very next thing you do is send a sales pitch, which executives will tell you constantly they hate that, you're not going to get another shot. So I think they confuse all this activity with getting a sales result.
Yeah, and I think LinkedIn needs to clean up as well. Some of that, the burden needs to be on LinkedIn's shoulders with regards to cleaning that up.
Well, I'd love to see that. I mean, I love LinkedIn, obviously, and of course, what they promote, you'll get a much higher return on your time investment using InMail, and I would suggest that you get a higher level result with a better quality message that's tailored and relevant to the person that you're trying to do business with. If it's just the same boilerplate piece of spam you send everybody else, who cares?
No, it's all about personalizing the message and trying to really reach your target audience accordingly, or the people that you're looking at, because there's so much, I call it the content marketing tsunami. We are being inundated by millions upon millions of messages on a daily basis,
right?
One type of content or another. No one has time for it. And if it's not personalized, it really resonates with the individual that you're trying to track. It's often not.
It does. So I did a fun little experiment, and for a year, Jeff, I saved sales messages that I receive, whether through LinkedIn InMail or through email, and I saved them for a year, and I asked friends and colleagues to do the same thing for me. And then I created a little ebook a couple months ago called Message Matters. Right? Do you know what yours says about you? And I actually included examples of many of these emails. Now, I always take out people's names and companies. I don't want to harsh them, but I also don't want to give the company free advertising either.
Correct.
Right? But I used it as a way to kind of compare and contrast, because some of the messages that I receive, they're just ludicrous. So can you imagine? You're a senior level executive in an organization. And I just talked with Tracy Eiler, who's the chief marketing officer at Inside View, on my recent Razor's Edge podcast. We talked about that. And I also talked with Bridget Gleason, who until recently was the VP of sales for Yesware. And they say the same thing. They get all these messages from people who want time. And they don't say anything compelling that would warrant these executives giving up time to talk to these folks. So I think the larger conversation is maybe the leaders are still stuck in the past measuring the wrong things.
I think that's part of the problem. It's, again, they're attracted by number of likes, number of followers, all kind, similar metrics, and really not. And how many pieces actually of content are being produced? I can tell you one company here, I don't want to name who it is, but one of the metrics is how much content do they produce. But is it the right content? Is it reaching the audience? It's quantity doesn't matter. It's the quality of what you produce and how effective it is in creating actions from those people that you're reaching.
Absolutely. I talked about that in the book. I feel the same way about networks. Who cares if you have 20,000 followers or 30,000 or in your case, 350,000 or whatever the crazy number is. But your case is a little different. You've cultivated a very strong following of people who are relevant for the kind of business that you're in.
Right.
My network is smaller and I've grown it organically, but that's intentional because I care, you know, it doesn't, the number itself doesn't matter. Like you said, it's really, it's the quality. So,
and how much engagement you have with these people.
Exactly. So when we think about measurement, I think what's still happening in sales organizations, Jeff, is that the same measurements are being used. How many phone calls did you make? How many emails did you send? And I don't believe that enough time is spent on looking at how many of the right phone calls to the right people did you make and how many emails with the right message led to a specific sales outcome, like you were able to secure the meeting. Does it matter if I send 1,000 emails every week? If nobody responds and I get no sales outcome from that? So I really think that sales leadership has to start looking at shifting the metrics on what they measure.
Well, that all comes down to a better training, Bob, with regard to how they, you know, actually measure their salespeople. And unless it is driven from the top, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, very much so. And then, so what we have happening is, you know, we have people in leadership positions who have been extremely successful coming up the ranks, doing things in a particular way. And so I think there's an opportunity for them to kind of shift their thinking as well. Think about it. What's more important? If I make 100 random phone calls or I make 25 of the right phone calls that lead to sales meetings? And the challenge here is that sometimes, you know, you end up bucking up against the system. My good friend Coca Sexton at LinkedIn told the story of how he, in a sales role, he started really embracing social selling. This is before he went to LinkedIn. And you know, he'd had the talk with the manager, and I'm going to be making less phone calls. And he was getting the numbers. He was still hitting his numbers and meeting the objectives. And he jokes that he almost got fired because he wasn't meeting the metric of making enough phone calls. To me, that's just silliness.
No, I agree with you. But that's the way that they chart these people.
It's like, I'm sorry, you're going to fire me because I didn't make enough phone calls, but I'm overachieving quota? Obviously, what I'm doing is working.
Well, it all ties back into these sales automation tools. I don't want to talk about any of the companies out there, but a lot of salespeople are graded on how much data they've inputted into the sales automation tools.
Yeah.
And well, if they don't input it, then there's something inherently wrong. They don't know how to sell. There's something. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because of the fact that they are not able to go out there because they're so entrenched in trying to fill in this data.
Well, you know, and there's a lot of truth there, Jeff. And I also feel like I sort of understand why management does it because, you know, I've been a longtime seller and I never liked inputting the data. And there are a lot of reasons for that. We don't want to do admin work. Maybe we don't want the rest of the world to know about all our contacts and what we're doing. Maybe we don't want to be accountable. And so I also understand that management is a little bit, it's kind of like catch-22 for them because they need the data in order to make better decisions at various levels in the business. And I know some organizations have gotten to the place where they've said, well, if you're a seller and you're not able to prove from prospect all the way to close deal by inputting the information and the opportunities in the system, then you're not going to get paid quota. So, you know, there's that. But on the other hand, I feel like some of these marketing automation and CRM systems and whatnot they've just become so bloated. They want so much information captured, but it's really not for sellers. It's more for other people in the organization. So I think that makes it, you know, I think that makes it a little bit tough.
Without question. I mean, I've seen it, experienced that with a former employer. Okay. I don't want to name, but basically we had the input is they were data driven far as they wanted to know market share. They wanted to know how much you're increasing this and that, the ASPs, it took a month of Sundays to input this data. I mean, some of it was worthwhile, to be quite honest with you. But
well, and of course, that benefits product marketers, but right. Is that really the salesperson's job? And I would say no. Salesperson's job is to be inputting, you know, putting in the prospect information, the lead information. You know, they need to be following the opportunities through the pipeline to deal close. You know, why are you expecting sellers to get all this market data that could be picked up by other people who do that that administrative work. But what do I know, Jeff?
What do you see here? How's it going to change, though, Bob? How's it going to evolve in that area? Is it going to be more astute sales managers out there that are going to look differently at the whole entire process, the metrics that are used for grading salespeople and what have you?
I think they're gonna have to. I mean, I think that if you really want to continue to grow your business and have less issues with, you know, leads and opportunities in the pipeline, and you want to shrink those sales cycles and things like that, I think holistically organizations need to look a little more carefully at the overall sales process, which would include, you know, even when salespeople are approaching potential customers, using email, the phone, you know, LinkedIn, Twitter, whatever it might be, are they even paying attention to the way in which sellers are approaching them and the message that they're using when they do that? And right now, I think that's a big gap, in my opinion.
I'd say my own gut, it's probably about 5% of the companies out there maybe doing that.
Very few. And you said it earlier, and again, this speaks to experts and their platitudes. Cranking out a lot of content to crank out a lot of content is not really the point. The point is that any of these activities that we get involved in should lead to a measurable sales outcome, don't you think?
Without question.
Jeff and Barb, can you hear me now?
Oh, yes. Welcome
back. Rob is back.
We thought you disappeared there into the Pacific Ocean.
It wasn't your fault. It wasn't your fault.
No, but we've been having a lively discussion here on sales automation and inputting of data, what salespeople should be doing in that regard. Maybe you could talk about what you're doing in your company with regard to the overall sales process and what the expectations are with some of these large sales automation tools, which I will not name, that are out there. And how do you cope with this?
Sure. And when you say sales automation tools, I'm not so sure if you mean something like an Inside Viewer or something like a CRM system.
Something like a CRM system.
Yeah, more CRM.
We integrate actually with just about every commercially available CRM system that's out there. And it's very important to have that integration, we believe. But getting back to the point that Barb was just making, I couldn't agree more that there are multiple ways to communicate to a customer nowadays. But and to the prospective marketplace out there, but it needs to be an organized drumbeat versus a scattershot shotgun approach of just, well, I'm going to tweet here, or I'm going to post on LinkedIn there, or I'm going to send emails here. There needs to be a fairly structured, I hate to use the word regimented, but needs to be a fairly structured process to this, so that you can remain organized, and to Barb's point, so that it can be tied back to some kind of measurable return on investment and some kind of measurable metric that shows you how successful your campaigns have been. And anybody that does any marketing automation, there's a number of big companies out there that do that, the lead scoring and lead routing kind of stuff. They will tell you that they're only as good as what they can measure. So, we try to make this a very, here at InsideView anyway, we try to make this a very measured process because it presents a much more professional appearance to the marketplace. So you won't see a lot of fragmented, disjointed marketing from our company. We have some very detailed processes in place that show you what to do next, really, and what's most effective when.
So you have essentially a process flow for the sales process.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the questions that you asked when I tried to dial back in, I tried to answer it, but you apparently couldn't hear me, which was, what do you guys do really from a training perspective nowadays with your sales force that's coming in? And, you know, one of the things we obviously do is a very, very deep dive into what our tools are, but also what else is out there and what of those 40,000 different data sources that we're bringing into one tool, how are those aggregated and then how do you use them? And what do customers really want to hear? Do they want to be tweeted to? Do they want to be pinged on LinkedIn? Do they want to get an in-mail? Do they want to get an email? So, you know, there are multiple ways, multiple channels, I guess, to get to the customer. And getting back to my earlier comment, it needs to be organized to be effective.
That is the secret sauce. You just hit the proverbial nail on the head with that. What do the customers want? How do they want as far as content marketing?
Customers, they don't matter.
Oh, yeah, no, true. But how should they be served? I mean, is it all a la carte, or is it, do they want the whole enchilada there at one time? And I feel that, like you're saying, I think it's important to talk to the customers, find out how do they want to be communicated with before you start throwing all kinds of content out at them.
And depending on your relationship, I have some customers that only want me to text them.
Right, correct. Or call them on the phone.
Right.
So every situation is different, but you'd think that the way, you know, people are talking, that one size fits all in this market, and it doesn't. It's nothing. A lot has changed, but a lot hasn't changed. It's how well, you know, as our friend Brian Kramer states so eloquently, it's human to human. It's all based upon that. And then what do they actually think? What do they want from you as far as information and everything else? And don't just throw it out there.
Yeah. So, Rob, what did you think about some of my comments related to what sales leaders are measuring today? Do you think there's too much emphasis on, like, number of phone calls and number of emails and less focus on the quality?
I think a lot of that, it depends on what market you're really looking at, I think, Barb. So, you know, if you're looking at the very small business market where maybe your sales motion is more transactional in process or transactional in nature, maybe multiple calls are the way to go. And so maybe you have sales development reps that are measured on 50 dials a day or 100 dials a day. In the large enterprise space, that is far less effective. And, you know, none of the buyers really in the enterprise space want to get telemarketed to that way. And generally speaking, in the enterprise space, as we all know, it's usually more of a consensus sale too. So you're not selling to a single decision maker necessarily. So, you know, I think that different approaches have to be tailored to the market in which you're going after.
You have another valid point there, and you're loaded with nuggets this afternoon, I can tell you. Not selling.
Well, I'm glad I came back then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Not selling to a single decision maker. I think that's the whole essence of social selling, because of the fact that what it allows you to do is identify those influencer points within organizations and to create relationships with them that are going to help you work in selling to multiple sales points within a respective company.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I've seen a statistic that says on average in some of these enterprise sales, it can be 12 to 15 people who are going to be involved in some way, either in the decision or the influencing of it. So, Rob, I'm also curious your thoughts, because, you know, I like to rage on about messaging. What do you think? Does the quality of the message that we're sending to people make a difference?
Quality in terms of is it single-minded in terms of just pushing your product, or quality in terms of trying to be more involved in thought leadership?
Well, I think maybe a little bit of both. I mean, what I keep seeing message-wise is a lot of the same spammy message that's not tailored, and clearly nobody did their research before sending it. So I was just curious what you thought about that. You must receive them yourself.
I do, and I think most of those I could tie back to somebody just trying to push their product.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I look at the prospects and customers I deal with, they are much more welcoming to have me share relevant insights that might be occurring to their competitors or to their industry than me saying, hey, buy more InsideView. You know, they don't want to hear that necessarily, but if I can show them value to using InsideView by saying, hey, here's some information that you might want to know about, or here's some things that's happening in the world of social media. How do you apply these tactics, or how can you leverage this strategy within your own sales organization? That, I think, is what really resonates.
Yeah, I agree. You mean the message that I got this morning from a company whose email message was, hey, guess what? We're happy to tell you we just secured another $30 million in Series B funding.
And what does that really mean to you?
Exactly my point.
Now, if it was, hey, I just secured this funding and here's what it's going to allow us to do, you know, here's the value that it's going to allow us to bring to you, the customer, that's a different message.
Yeah, really, and the message was, it's going to allow us to expand our footprint in this market space. And I thought, well, all right, that's good.
Which to the customer might mean a unfocused or a diluted focus on you.
Right. Right, right. And then I love the messages. You probably heard me. I saved them in the ebook. And I love the ones that are clearly selling an enterprise product, but they're targeting me, a small business. And nothing they say in their message is relevant to a small business. And their product doesn't even fit. So why are they even emailing me is the question.
Exactly. And in my opinion, there's no excuse for that because, you know, as we've talked about on this call, there's no shortage of tools out there that should allow you to tailor your message to exactly the right audience. So if, you know, the days in my mind of just blasting those kind of blanket statements out there should be over because we have enough market intelligence available to us to tailor it.
Now, what you talk about tools. If you're a salesperson, certainly your product is quite attractive to salespeople and helping them along the sales process. What other tools would you recommend that you feel could be effectively integrated with what you're doing and help a salesperson out?
Sure. So, and I'll just go in my day-to-day space. I mean, obviously, I use InsideView all day long, but if you look at my browser, I've got about, 15 tabs up right now, and I probably have about 6 or 8 LinkedIn tabs. And so I definitely sort of coexist with LinkedIn. I do a lot of cross-referencing. So, you know, I mentioned that we bring 40,000 different data sources into our tool. We do triangulation on the backside of that, which is a real fancy word of really what we mean by that is we just compare those different data sources because we're looking for similarities in the results that we're querying. That way we have a higher degree of confidence that our information is accurate. But I do some of my own manual triangulation, if you will, by going out to LinkedIn. I very rarely ever go to a company's website anymore, though. So, you know, I look back at the time where I considered joining InsideView. I was actually an Equifax employee at the time. And what I did was I did what every normal salesperson does. I went to InsideView's website. I looked all through their leadership pages and all through their press releases. And I wanted to see, you know, when did they get their last series of funding? How long have they been in business? How many customers do they have? And then the last thing I went to was the product page. And when I started to see what the product solution set was all about, the light bulb went off over my head saying, I just spent 2 hours doing a ton of manual research on one company when I could have used the product to do all that in 15 minutes.
Right. So it makes the salespeople a lot more effective without question.
It does. There's a great study that's out there called trigger selling, and it shows you the chance of the percent probability of you getting an email returned or a phone call returned by reaching out to a prospect. And if all you have is the business data, meaning what you would find on a normal business card, you've got about an 8% chance of getting that return phone call if you just launched a cold call into that person. But if you can marry that query with some kind of relevant insight that might resonate with the person you're trying to reach out to, then you've got about a 24% chance of them returning your call. But the real gold standard here is if you can get a warm introduction into that person. So that's why I go back to talking about LinkedIn and InsideView. It's trying to figure out how you might be connected into the person you're trying to reach. And that might be several layers deep. It might be through an alumni connection or maybe a previous coworker used to work with the person you need to talk to. You can see those relationships exposed to you in some of the tools that we have available nowadays. So now when you launch that telephone call into the person, you've got about a 44 to an 84% chance of them returning your call, depending on whether you're getting referred externally or internally through the company you're trying to reach.
Yeah, I think you have another excellent point there with regard to trigger selling and how do the salespeople, it gets back to what Bob and I were talking about as far as training, is actually training salespeople how to identify the trigger points that so that they can create messages or create opportunities for themselves and trying to take care of pain points or changes within organizations that are going to lead to sales for them.
Right.
And a lot of them don't know how to do that.
They don't, and there's an assumption that they do. And then I'd like to reinforce what Rob just said, which is I think a huge overlooked area for salespeople is they don't leverage referrals and introductions enough. And if I'm remembering correctly, Rob, those stats you just cited about 44 and 84 come from work done by Stephen Bitstrich and his team, who wrote the book Selling to the C-Suite. So, you know, if 44% of the time you can get a meeting from somebody who's referred you in externally and they are trusted and respected, and then if you get the shot at 84%, right, if they're internal and trusted and respected,
right,
those are way better odds than just trying to randomly dial, don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, the trends that I really see that are hot right now are it's always contact data, right? I mean, sales companies, marketing organizations, they always want as accurate data as they can get for contacting the prospects they're trying to reach. That's always going to be a hot spot. So, you know, I think the U.S. Census Bureau will tell you now that in the U.S., the average tenure in any job is only 4 years. So that obviously means that that data is continually perishing at a pretty significant rate annually. So that data needs to always be refreshed and updated as much as possible. And you can't always rely on a tool like LinkedIn because, as we know, that's user-donated data, if you will. So when somebody loses their job, they may not update their LinkedIn profile that day because maybe they don't want people to know they've lost their job. Or when they get a new job, sometimes they don't always say, you know, oh, the first thing I need to do is go update my profile. I've got a new job. So you need other tools that can do that sort of triangulation for you. And maybe it's, you know, finding a mention of a leadership change in a press release that will give you the more immediate data that person just got a new job at a new company, which could be a completely new sales opportunity for you. Maybe that person loved you at the prior company and they've just moved to a new one. That's a great opportunity for you to reach out to them at that moment and first congratulate them on their new job. And secondly, say, you know, we added a lot of value to you at your last employer. I bet I can do the same thing for you in your new role.
Without question. I mean, certainly those are some of the trigger points that you want to be following within your respective businesses. Now, I was going to ask you, moving forward, though, what can salespeople do? How do they take advantage of all these tools, the so-called social selling arena, to really become as successful as possible in the sales process? You want to comment on that, Bob?
Well, I'm gonna let Rob. Yeah. I want Rob to jump in first because I want to make sure we don't lose him again. So.
Okay. Go ahead, Rob. Go ahead.
The first thing I would say is I personally think it's very important to be integrated within your CRM system. I don't know of too many successful sales organizations out there that are still operating on Excel spreadsheets and things like that to track and manage their pipeline. So if you're not integrated into the system that most salespeople are living in all day long and have the ability to move information between the market intelligence tools and the existing CRM system, I think that's a huge disconnect. So that integration to InsideView anyway is a core competency of ours and a core value proposition of ours. We want to be a view window in that CRM system, and that doesn't, you know, it doesn't make a difference whether it's Dynamics or Salesforce or NetSuite or SAP or Oracle On Demand. We're in all of those systems. And it's a very simple integration exercise. So that's the first thing I would say is to make the salesperson effective, you need to go where the salespeople live. So if they're living in their CRM system, there's a lot of studies out there, too, that show you there can be as high as a 72% poor adoption rate of CRM systems in some companies. And a lot of times, if you dig down into why that is, salespeople hate the manual cutting and pasting it takes to update records in their CRM.
True.
If you can bring in that information from a market intelligence company like us and have two clicks where you can update a CRM record with new existing, you know, new fresh information like new revenue numbers or new employee count numbers, that makes the salesperson's job so much easier.
Yeah, you probably heard us talking about that before you got back on too, Rob, that I was just saying I just think it's ludicrous the amount of information sometimes companies are expecting sellers to put into the system when that's really, I don't believe, should be their job. As it is, their ability to spend time selling is pathetically low. And partly that's because they're spending so much time doing all this other admin.
Or pre-call research. You know, the statistics show that a lot of reps' time is spent, sometimes up to 40% of it, just doing pre-call research.
Right.
So that takes just a ton of actual selling time away from the person responsible for generating revenue for your company.
Right. So the research is important. It's just how do you do it quickly and efficiently, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And it's most companies don't train salespeople how to do that either, right?
No, we were talking about that. You know, having had a business that's largely focused around training initiatives, it's still surprising to me how many organizations look at training as kind of a one-time event versus really an ongoing process for new people, experienced people. You know, the world is moving quickly, and I think that organizations need to continue to invest. And so what I would say to individual contributors, though, don't wait for your employer. If they're not spending the time and the money investing in you, you can go get training on your own. And good salespeople do that. I, through the years, spent thousands and still do. Books, audio tapes. Now it's podcasts I listen to. And you can listen to webinars and all kinds of things to grow your education. And I think if you want to be here in 5 years as a sales professional, you need to do that.
Yeah, the return on investment is just too big to ignore.
Yeah, I agree.
You have to be learning.
The other thing I would say is that I know this is the Sales Influencers radio show, but I don't think we should forget about our friends in marketing either.
That's
because
right.
There's always been a long-term disconnect between the marketing organization and the sales organization. Some people would say there's a chasm between the two.
I know of a podcast they can listen to.
Well, it's very important, I think, to arm that marketing organization with the cleanest, freshest data that they can get also, so that when they are passing leads to a salesperson, whether that's coming off of an inbound web form or from an event or off of a lead list, every single marketing organization will tell you they're not pleased with the quality of their data and that there's always missing pieces of information. And that's what leads to the frustration, because salespeople open that lead and they say, well, this is great, but I just called this guy's telephone number that's on the lead and it's disconnected. Or I just sent that woman an email and it just bounced back.
Right.
So it's got to have the relevant information in it. And if you can make marketing more valuable to the sales organization, that alignment becomes so much tighter.
Absolutely. And though I was sort of joking about the podcast, I'm really sort of not, because I just did a great, as you know, Rob, a great podcast interview with Tracy Eiler, who's the CMO at InsideView, and it's outstanding. And we talked about sales and marketing alignment. And I'm very impressed with Tracy in the sense, Jeff, that she firmly believes that marketing professionals must be tied to the revenue number as she is. And she had some really cool things to say in this podcast that I think is a real benefit to both sales and marketing folks. And so
I'll have to listen to it.
Yeah, they started InsideView started promoting it yesterday, and of course it's on iTunes so people can find it. But great to hear from a chief marketing officer saying it's my job to be tied to and supportive of the salespeople's revenue number.
Right. So what do you see both of you moving forward though with this whole social selling arena? Are we going to what changes are you going to see in the future?
Let's let Rob go first.
What changes will we see in the future? Well, I think first of all, you know, again, going back to my early days of selling in the 80s, in my mind, I feel like we've made quantum leaps, but we haven't really completely solve the problem yet. So I think that, you know, if I look at what my company here at InsideView is trying to do, we're not just sitting back resting on our laurels saying the product is done, because the data is always changing. So we like to say that it's like taking a picture of a river. You know, that picture at that moment in time is accurate, but as soon as your lens refreshes, that water has already changed. And so that's kind of what handling large amounts of data is like. You have to continually make that better. Relative to the, you know, the relevant insights I mentioned when you're trying to reach out to a prospect, we're always trying to make our pairing algorithms better so that the information we're giving salespeople and the information we're giving marketing people is more compelling and more tailored to the job at hand. So I think that those algorithms will continue to get better. And then the other thing I would say is one of the really hot spots right now in the industry is predictive. So, and predictive is a very broad brush, very broad topic. But what we're really trying to get to is to bring our tools and our information right into the workflow of the salesperson. And it starts at the top of the funnel for the marketing people. But we want to be very predictive and prescriptive in terms of what the next step is. Okay, I just got that nugget of information, but what should I really do with it and how should I go about it? And it's mapping out that entire workflow with the data as the foundation that is really probably our next big focus.
Mm-hmm. It's becoming ever more complex,
yeah.
Without question.
He's right. I think, Jeff.
Well, there's a lot of science behind the scenes, but we try to make it really simple for the user.
Well, and you do. I'm an avid user, and I think it's great. From the people side, Jeff, I think salespeople are going to have to continue to evolve their skills, certainly, to become even stronger problem solvers and consultative salespeople. The industry as a whole, can I just say it? A lot of these experts who have zero sales experience will die away, fade away quietly into the night. Please, dear God, let them fade quietly.
I agree with you. I mean, how can you go out and give advice on something you've never done?
You know, it's a mystery to me.
I just shake my head, quite honest with you.
And I'm sure I'm just being somewhat protective about this, but I don't see the role of the salesperson going away. I think even if you polled the buyer community, they don't just want a bunch of self-service portals to go out and purchase product from. There's still a definite role for the sales function. I just think it needs to be more informed nowadays. So like I said before, you can't show up and say, tell me what your biggest objectives are. Tell me what keeps you up at night. You're expected nowadays, it's table stakes nowadays, to know that before you make that call.
Yeah. I agree 100%. And I said that earlier too. Salespeople aren't going to go away. We're going to be needed. But I think some people, the way they sell today, if they're still selling that way or trying to 5 years from now, they'll be out of a job.
Well, I hate to say it, folks, but we're almost out of time here today. So
such
what
a
I'd
great
like to
conversation.
Do, Rob, maybe you can go first. If you could perhaps tell our listeners how to get in touch with you.
Sure. Well, the easiest way to always get in touch with me is by email. So I'm at rob.armstrong@insideview.com. There's two websites, actually, I would mention. One of them is just our normal website, insideview.com. There's also a great website called trust.insideview.com. So for the people that are on the call that are very data interested, we go into deep details about our data curation and methodology. So there's a lot of great content there to surf through. Other than that, I'm always available in Atlanta, Georgia at 678-296-4802.
Okay, Barb.
So you can find me, unlike Rob, then I got to pull him into the Twitter sphere. You can find me at Barbara Giamanco on Twitter. You can definitely find me, Barbara Giamanco, on LinkedIn as well. You'll find Rob there as well. Feel free to email me, barbara.giamanco@scs-connect.com. Google my name, Bing my name, whatever. You can find me pretty easily.
Oh, absolutely. I found you, Bob.
And, of course, I blog at barbaragiamanco.com. So,
right.
Yeah.
No, I can't tell you. It's been a real pleasure having both of you on this afternoon.
Oh, well, thank
you,
Jeff.
We could talk for actually another hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever, in this whole subject matter. We haven't even scratched the surface with regard to what's going on out there in this whole sales arena, the social selling arena.
Well, you have to bring us back then when Rob's back in Atlanta.
Oh,
we'll both come
absolutely.
Join you.
Yes. He can
I would jump
the,
at that
crawl
chance.
To the studio, Rob. Okay, we'll give you the
he can just walk over here.
So it's right around the corner, actually. So, again, this is Jeff Sheehan with the Sales Influencer Radio, also known as Sir Radio. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show, I'd very much like to hear from you. Without further ado, then, I'd like to turn the show back to the show engineer and say goodbye on behalf of Barb Giamanco and Rob Armstrong. It's been a real pleasure, folks, and look forward to having you on again sometime in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.